Hello, and welcome to Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole. I'm so happy to be with you today. You know, what we do here on Dream Leapers is to bring on guests who can inspire each one of us to leap into our greatness. And this is so important, especially right now. We have been home for a year and a half. Can you imagine that? For a whole year and a half, most of us have been at home. For some, quarantine has felt completely isolated. For others, it has been empowering. For many of us, it's been those things and lots of stuff in between. And as you know, I regularly ask the question of everyone who's part of my world, which includes all of you. Later, when you are asked, what did you do during the quarantine of this COVID-19 pandemic? What are you going to say? What did you do? How did you spend your time? Did you do anything meaningful that you want to herald, that you can be proud of, that speaks to who you are and that marks this time in a positive way for you? What did you do? You know, I think all of us remember where we were and what we were doing at 9/11. Now, that was one day, a moment in time. Over a year and a half, how did you spend your time? What were you doing? And so today I'm bringing on a guest who's a very good friend of mine I've known for many, many years. And I'm bringing him on for a specific reason. Because during the pandemic, he has taken action in lots of different ways that have improved his life and the lives of others. And, you know, I'm always looking for people who are doing good by them and by the community, because that is what makes us stronger and more vibrant. And so my guest is Sekou Wright. So I want to tell you a bit about him. He is an author. He is a playwright. He is an activist. He's a designer. He's written three books. Is it three books? He's ghostwritten a New York Times bestseller. We can't say what the book is, but a New York Times bestseller. He has written many articles and columns. He's a writer first. That's hence his name, Sekou Writes. But among all the things that he's done, during COVID-19, he also has created an initiative that he calls Doing. And he's going to tell us about that and so much more. So let us welcome right now, Sekou Writes.
What a great intro. What a great intro. We're recording that, right? We're recording that. I almost played that again. That was great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, for sure. And so, Sekou, let's start with Doing. And I'll tee it up by saying, you know, I talk to people all the time who tell me, this is what I want to do. This, you know, because we're harvesting our dreams, trying to find them and bring them to the surface. And too often, a week will go by, a month will go by, a year will go by, 10 years will go by. I said I was going to do X, and then it doesn't happen. What have you done?
Yeah. So your intro, your teeing it up, reminds me of what Kevin Hart says. He's got this little soliloquy where he says, "Now I'm tired of talkers. Just go ahead and make something happen. Be about that life." You know, he says he's an oh my God person. He wants to do something that makes people say, oh my God. So I'm aspiring to be on Kevin Hart's level. I got a ways to go. But for me, doing period, and see the period at the end there, you know, doing period is about doing period. And it was initially just for me. It was my way of telling myself to not do what you just said, not talk about what I was going to do, but to just start doing, to be in action, to start moving forward. And because I needed reminders, because that's not my usual MO, my typical MO is to get stuck in analysis paralysis and overanalyze and overthink. So because I needed reminders, I created a Doing period t-shirt for me to wear, just as a visual reminder, so that when I saw my reflection, I'd be like, okay, that's right, we're doing. We're not thinking about it. We're plowing ahead. And so it started with me, and then other people were like, I want one of those shirts. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And for me, it's an acronym. I've never said what it stands for, but I have some personal meaning for these letters. And what I discovered.
Come on now. What does it stand for? Right. Let this be the debut moment.
All right. So this will be the debut moment. But I will admit that it has evolved. Like it started as one thing. And over time, each of the letters have changed. So what it is now, which is not what it was in the beginning, is definitely outpicturing internal necessary greatness. So what I mean is that the greatness is within all of us. It's necessarily there, and you have to find it and then figure out a way to outpicture it. And for me, I'm definitively outpicturing it. And it took me some time, as I said, to get to that acronym and start off with something else. And
what do you mean by outpicturing? What is
outpicturing?
That?
I'm glad you asked. It's about taking what's within and expressing it out in the world. So that old expression, as within, so without, as above, so below, that law of complementary opposites, that the idea that all the secrets, all the treasures are within. And when you get in touch with that, they automatically outpicture in the world. They automatically become a part of your new aura. And I found that in this period, a lot of what I've done has been revisiting old phrases, because we've all heard as within, so without. Like that's an old phrase, but now it has new meaning for me because I am focused on what's inside me, tapping into what's inside me and figuring out a way to change it and then outpicture it to the world.
And what's interesting is doing it for you and kind of declaring it. So it's an affirmation that you wear.
Right on it. So after a while, I started calling these wearable affirmations because now I've created more shirts and more sweaters and more hoodies that have one word on them. And they are wearable affirmations. And each time I've created it for me, and then someone else has said, I want that too. And what I was starting to say earlier is that people have created their own acronyms for doing, because I never defined it until just now on your show.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. But other people have made up acronyms for themselves as to what doing meant and other definitions beyond the acronym. Even if they didn't have an acronym, they say, well, you know, what this means to me is such and such and so and so. And it's been different for a lot of different folks. So that's been very gratifying that people have attach themselves to this idea of doing or whatever it means to them, separate from what it means to me.
And because I know you are always attaching your creativity to a give back, to a charity, to a charitable effort, to those in need, tell me what you are doing with these shirts that are not just doing, but you have some other ones that partial proceeds are going to charities. Talk about that.
Yeah, so this evolved organically also. At first, it was just a wearable affirmation for me. And then, as I said, people started asking for it and it kind of grew into something else. And then there was an article that came out about me during the pandemic that called me a hero. And I felt like, ooh, that's a little big. That's a little big. That's a big word. And so to make the word a little more accessible to me, I turned that into an acronym too. So hero, meaning helping everyone reaps optimism. And so I created hero t-shirts and hero hoodies. And then I started using that to give to the unhoused. So the hero hoodies are a go-go. You get one and then I gift one. So for every person that buys a hero hoodie, I donate a brand new hero hoodie to the unhoused. So I'm very grateful to be doing that work. And in addition, everything else I sell, I give 10% to the different nonprofits that are on the front lines of the unhoused movement. And that word, unhoused, is a word that I learned by being involved in that community, because I came in using the word homeless, and then I saw that that word is stigmatized in the community. And so now I practice the habit of saying unhoused, because any of us can end up unhoused at any given moment, like there, but for the grace of God, go I. And so that's one of the ways I'm giving back.
Well, and I'm glad to know the terminology, because whenever I've said homeless, it doesn't ring right, but I didn't know that that was a term. Unhoused is certainly much more dignified and real. I mean,
we know
that during this pandemic, there are many thousands of people who have become unhoused who never imagined that for themselves. You know, as you say, there but for the grace of God. True. There's so many people who have found themselves with nowhere to live. And knowing that, how do you How do you envision that what you are able to do makes a difference? Because sometimes people feel like the problem is so big. What does it even matter if I help? Because it could feel like a drop in the bucket.
Right. And homelessness is vast. Being unhoused is a vast challenge. And it's not an issue that I worked with before. I literally fell into it by extension of some of the other things that I've done here in Nashville. But it has been gratifying in a number of ways. And just to piggyback on what you said about there before the grace of God go I, at my first event where I was donating physically the hero hoodies to the unhoused, I mistook some of the volunteers for people who were unhoused. And of course that was embarrassing, but I was able to play it off. But then I realized some of the other volunteers were mistaking other volunteers for people who are unhoused. And it really cemented that idea that there, but for the grace of God, go out. There's not that much of a difference in terms of look and vibe and interaction between us and them. Like, it really underscores that idea that it could happen to anybody. And to answer your question, how I know I'm making a difference was a surprise to me. I donated to an event called Hoodies for the Homeless. It was their third annual event. And my intention was to bring hoodies, right? And so my first goal was to bring 10 hero hoodies. That was my grand goal. Just let me just get to 10, and then I will donate 10 hoodies to the unhoused, right? Well, it took off, and so many people on social media took up the challenge of 10 hoodies as their own challenge to their community, and it really just skyrocketed. And also, people started giving me slightly used hoodies. So I showed up at the event with 117 hoodies, most of which were used, but many of which were brand new hero hoodies. And I found that the unhoused folks greatly preferred the hero hoodies over the used hoodies because they were brand new, because they were still in plastic, because there was a sense of self-esteem with getting something new for a change. And that really resonated with me. The majority of the hoodies that were used, I ended up just giving to a different organization because everyone that came up to me wanted the new stuff. And so that made me know that I was onto something, that I was doing something that was beneficial, not just physically in terms of something to put on, but spiritually in terms of how they see themselves. And also the word hero on their chest is an affirmation for them and for others. Because I find when I'm out in the city with my hero hoodie on, people refer to me as a hero just because they can see it's on my chest. And so I know that that's happening for them, for these unhoused folks. And so that's what a great upliftment for them.
And at this point, you've been producing the hero hoodies for a while, working with offering, you know, give one. What is it called? Give one.
I've been calling it GOGO. Get one, gift one.
Get one, gift one. What do the numbers look like in terms of how many you've been able to distribute thus far?
So a little over 109 hoodies so far, brand new hoodies given to the unhoused in multiple cities. That's the part I'm excited about. So the hoodies have been spread all over the world. There's a hero hoodie in Italy now in terms of the people who are wearing them. And I've been able to donate hero hoodies here. I've got a couple of drop spots here in the city, which means that's a place where I go and I bring hero hoodies and leave them there in case the unhoused stop by and say that they need something. So there's a church involved. There's a juice bar involved. There's a bookstore involved. There's several places here in the city that provide the hero hoodies that I give them to the unhoused. And also I was able to do hero hoodie drops in two different cities, in Memphis, Tennessee, and in Louisville, Kentucky, where I visited women's shelters and gave hero hoodies directly to the women there. So it's really taken on a life of its own. I've also got hero hoodie team captains, which that's not even something I ever would have thought of, but people have volunteered to become team captains in other cities and to facilitate hero hoodie drops in those cities. So it looks like Colorado is going to be the next place. So we'll see what happens, but I'm very excited about the momentum that it has on its own.
That is amazing. Hey guys, we are talking to Sekou Writes. He is the creator of the Doing Movement and also the Hero Hoodies movement, where you get one and then you gift one so that people who are unhoused have an opportunity to have something new that they can wear that celebrates their greatness, even at a time when they're in a tremendous challenge. So you are listening to Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole. We are here on WBAI 99.5 FM and everywhere online at WBAI.org. I'm so happy that we are here talking about, with Sekou Writes, we're talking about what he has done and is doing, using that word doing, because that is the name of the movement that he has started during this time of COVID. A year and a half in, you know, people are tired of being in. Right now, slowly but surely, as people get vaccinated, we're going out. But it's a re-entry time. And that's another thing. How are you re-entering is something I want folks to think about. And you have the time that you have been at home. We're emerging out of our homes. And are you emerging differently? What does re-entry look like for you? So Sekou, let me ask you that. And I'll set it up too, because you have described you are in Tennessee, in Nashville, Tennessee. So the great thing about being online with WBAI is that we are everywhere online. But just so folks know, I met Sekou in New York, where we are. But like many people, during COVID, folks have moved different places, and you were actually already there with your mother, and you decided to stay. So what has it been like for you with your mom during this extended period of time being, you know, in the middle of the country and the South?
Right. A lot of transitions. So just to explain, yes, I live in New York. I come to Nashville every winter, every Christmas to spend the winter season with my mom and my aunt. And so I did that in 2019, expecting that things would be the same. And then I was still here working on a project with Fisk University when COVID happened. And I decided to stay and not only continue to work on the project with Fisk, but continue to make sure that my family was squared away and taken care of. And yeah, nobody expected it to last this long, right? Like, I figured exactly. I would just wait out this thing, whatever it was, but no one expected it to last this long. And that's meant a lot of different things for me. And I want to go back to something that you said at the very top of the show. You were talking about the legacy that people leave. And I started thinking about that relatively early in the days of COVID, because they were talking about this being a potentially fatal disease. And so I started thinking about what I would want my legacy to be. Would I want my legacy to be what I had done up until that point? Or did I want something else for my life, for my legacy? And so that really inspired me to push so hard on these various things. You know, the doing movement, as you call it, the Hero Hoodie movement, the play, which has turned into, you know, a number of other things, this documentary film that I released recently. Like, all of those things are bigger than the things that I was doing before. They're more grounded. And for me, it's been very important to reimagine my life because of COVID. And so in terms of exiting, as you say, I'm exiting.
Or re-entering.
Re-entering, right. I'm re-entering as a different person, really, because I have worked very hard to change the ways that I move, the ways that I think, the ways that I do. And the other day, this has been my watershed moment. The other weekend, I ran my first 5K on Saturday, but without any planning or preparation or the proper clothing even. I saw the sign late Friday night and early Saturday morning. I said, I'm going to do it. And I went and I did well. My only goal was to not stop jogging. But not only did I not stop jogging, I actually placed sixth in my group.
And wow.
in my cargo shorts and shirt socks. like I just went ahead and did it. And then the next day, Sunday, I ran another 5K. I wanted to make sure it wasn't a fluke. So I did two back-to-back 5Ks on Saturday and Sunday. And I know that I would not have been able to do that before the pandemic.
Okay, so wait. So I want to break this down, because I did see on social media the 5K one day and the 5K the next day. I just thought you had reposted. I didn't realize that they were two separate 5Ks. So let's give some context, because for many, many people during COVID, sitting, looking at a screen for whatever video conferencing platform people may have been using, folks have gained weight. I want you to talk about your journey, because it was pre-COVID, you know, that, you know, to the extent that you want to talk about it, but many people go through challenges. And I know you went through an emotional kind of spiritual crisis, and it completely turned your life around. And if you would talk about that, and because I think for many people who are in pain, to know that you can climb out of that pain and really soar is helpful. So can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah. So what I will say, I'm going to start with the pull quote. The pull quote is, pain to a certain extent makes you invulnerable. And people don't think about it that way, but I became impervious to slight pains. Like, I'll use it a really good example. I ended up in the hospital during the pandemic, and they couldn't find a vein. They were trying to give me an IV drip. They couldn't find a vein, so they kept poking me all over the place. And they were very apologetic, and I didn't care. I didn't care because my physical pain and my emotional pain was so much greater than these little pinpricks that I couldn't care less. And so that's what I mean. Like, you could endure smaller pains that would normally derail you when you have a big emotional pain. And so what I found for me is that I was able to accomplish more. I was able to make harder decisions. I was able to push myself a little further because I started the Doing Movement in a very dark space. Like, it was a dark period of time for me. And I was able to make really sweeping changes easily. Like, people always ask me if it was difficult to stop drinking. But no, I stopped drinking cold turkey on a day because that the pain of not drinking was so much smaller than the pain, the emotional pain that I was in at the time. And I made other sweeping changes. I went back to being a vegetarian easily. I accomplished these other things we've talked about, you know, creating the Doing Movement, the Hero Hoodie Movement, this play that I mounted at Fisk. I was able to push on those things because the usual pains didn't affect me. And I'll give you another example. The play at Fisk called Brown Boy Mad, the second time we did the play was the beginning of COVID. They weren't even calling it a pandemic yet, but everyone was telling me not to do it, right? Because we didn't know what this thing was that was going on. But it was easy for me to push past all those objections. And I said at the time, like, no one has to show up, but I will do the play by myself as a one-man show to an empty theater, but I'm going to do it. And then that energy attracted other people to me, like other people that were involved said, well, if he's still going to do it, then I'm going to do it with him. And it turned out well, but I was able to muster that kind of energy because I had this emotional angst that made me impervious to other smaller pains that normally would have stopped me. And I think that's an important thing for folks to know.
And based on the health things that you did, which is stopping drinking, changing your diet dramatically, and exercising every single day, do you know how much weight you've lost?
No, I don't. Before I left New York, I'd lost 25 pounds like that. That was mostly I stopped drinking and I started doing cardio every day and more cardio than I had been doing previously. And yeah, I've continued to do that in Nashville. When the gyms closed, I just started running outside. I remember there were 2 days when I was like, oh, let me sit still like the world is telling me to because of this pandemic. And I couldn't do it. I had too much positive forward life momentum by then. And so everything inside of me was saying, keep moving, keep working. And so I just got out and started jogging and working my body. And I believe that the body was made to be moved because the more I moved, the better I felt, the more I produced those endorphins. It helped me in so many ways. Not to mention it helped me run 2 5Ks in a row, even though I'd never done that before.
Okay, that's what I was going to say, because you said there was no preparation. But for the listeners, I don't want anybody out there who's sitting all day to say, now I'm going to run 2 5Ks in a row. You have been running your you-know-what off for more than a year and a half, because you had started this, I would say, at least 2 years ago, right? Yes. And there's so many people, Sekou, who feel like it's too late, you know, like at a certain age, if you haven't gotten yourself fit, then it's too late that, well, you know, I got to buy bigger clothes. And didn't you tell me you can fit your clothes from high school now?
I'm high school skinny officially because there's clothes in my mom's house that are from high school. And I was like, oh, this fits. I'm officially high school skinny.
And tell folks, if you will, at least your age group, where do you fit in just so people could understand?
Yeah, I mean, my age group for the race was 45 to 55, and I placed sixth in my group.
Okay, so just everybody listening, he's in the 45 to 55 category, right? That's your age, and you have been able to, I'm going to say you probably lost double that. You lost at least 40, maybe even 50 pounds. I think so. Imagine that. So everybody who's listening, don't think it's too late for you. It is not too late. You can still make the story that is the story you want to make right now by choosing to make a change that will just make it better for your life. And I think that that is so incredibly important. So I'm going to take this moment right now to say to everyone, you are listening to Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole. I'm so happy to be here with you today here on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM in New York City and everywhere online at WBAI.org. You know, we are listener sponsored radio. This is the 61st year. Imagine that. In COVID, we stayed alive. We should be so proud of ourselves for being able to keep honest, progressive radio on the air, 100% listener sponsored. That means everyone listening. It is because of you and your friends and people who love this radio station and support it that we get to be here with 24-hour programming for you. As you know, for me, I've been doing this show for 3 years. And by the way, Sekou came with me every week because we used to be on Sundays. He would come every week with me when we started the show and support me. And so interesting that now we get to be together to talk about what he's been doing. And I just want to say thank you, Sekou, for being with me through this and so many other things. And to all of you out there who are listening, we need your support. You know, we ask this every day because we don't have commercials. What we have is your support. So you can become a BAI buddy, which means that you make a donation every month of any size. And as I often say, we have that monthly electric bill, the telephone bill. Folks have monthly bills, just like we do at home. WBAI does too. If you gave like $25 a month, that helps to keep the phone lines up. We would appreciate that so much. You could also make a one-time contribution of any size, and you can call us at 212-206-2950. I'm going to say it again because it's a new number. 212-206-2950, and make a pledge of any size. We so very much appreciate anything that you're able to give. And
I'm going to piggyback on that. And if you make a donation of at least $40, I will send you a doing period t-shirt. Let's get you doing at home, folks. Let's get you doing and being in motion and supporting WBAI. We can do it together.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Sekou. So a doing t-shirt, $40 donation or more. And you just, when you call 212-206-2950, you say that that's what you want. You want to get a doing t-shirt, limited quantity. So you need to do it right away. Right. Let us know right away. And you can also go online to give to the numeral two, WBAI.org. We need your support. We appreciate your support. It is when we lock hands and arms and resources that we get to bring programming like this. And again, for me, it's such an honor to be able to do this week after week and bring so many interesting people who help to inspire us to leap into our greatness. And that's what it's all about. So thank you, Sekou, doing t-shirts for $40. You can get one, 212-206-2950. Don't miss us. Call, get yours now. So Sekou, let's talk about the play. So, and I want to step back for a moment because there are a lot of creative people who listen to my show. Many people don't believe that they can make a living working in the arts, you know, and both of us have. That our words would matter enough to other people that they would support the words. and the images and the stories that we tell. And so you have created a play that is autobiographical, but then you brought it to Fisk, and you have males and females who have brought the play to life in ways that I know you didn't imagine when you wrote it. Tell us, what is Brown Boy Mad, and how it has come to life on the campus of Fisk?
So we're all the way back to the word doing, because what I've discovered is once you start doing it, it evolves in ways that you can't predict on paper. You can plan all you want, you can write down all you want, but once you start doing it, once you put it out there in the universe, other things will happen. And this is a great example. So yes, not only is it an autobiographical play, it was a play that was sitting on my hard drive for a couple of decades. It had been written, it was just sitting there, right? It was my idea of doing that got it off my hard drive and out into the world. And then once I got to Fisk, I remember there was a group of young actresses that were like, all right, so we want to be in the play. And I was like, oh no, it's autobiographical, it's my story, so there's no female roles. And they were like, okay, well, you're a writer, what else you got? And I was like, nothing really, you know? And then I kept doing things at Fisk. Like, I did a couple of lectures and I was there often. So I'd run into these students, and one in particular, and every time I saw her, she was like, so you got something for me to do? And it was after one of the lectures that I gave that it hit me. The lecture was about the inciting incident with race and racism, like the moment when I realized that I was a Black man and that was different than other experiences I could have. It was when I bought my first car, I was almost beaten by the police because they thought I stole it. And I told that story, and the teacher decided to have everyone in the class say something. It was a class of about 30, 40 students. And all the stories were heartbreaking. And almost all the students had one. Like, maybe three or four didn't, but they all had one. And they were current stories. They were, like, separated by a week or a month. They weren't stories from a way long time ago, as it was in my case. That the timeline was connected between my story of buying my first car in college and their stories that had just happened a month or so ago. And there was no difference between male and female. And that's when it really hit me that, yes, my stories are autobiographical, but they are all connected. All these stories are connected. And so right after that lecture, I was like, all right, if you guys still want to be in the play, let's do this. And they got really excited, and they embodied different ages and stages of my life very well. And sitting in the audience, sitting in the theater, looking up at that, it just really boggled my mind to see my experience transcend gender and just be about race and the ways that we exist in the world and the ways that other people try to constrict the ways we exist in the world. It was very, very moving. So the title of the play is Brown Boy Mad. And yes, there are women in it, but the title precedes the fact that women are in the space now. And it has evolved into a number of different things. We did two staged readings at Fisk University. I'm working on an actual production, meaning lighting changes, scene changes, costume changes, all of that. There was a short film that I played at the beginning of the play that has evolved into its own separate documentary short that's been picked up by a number of film festivals. It's just been accepted to its fourth film festival, as a matter of fact. It's been mentioned in Huffington Post, the New York Times. So there's like all this energy around these intensely personal and intensely painful. And so there's a blessing there, and there's growth there, because we have to realize collectively as a society that there's so much more work to be done. And I'm grateful that my work can be a part of that process. So to circle all the way back to what you said at the beginning, you're talking about making a living. Yeah, it's been very interesting to me that so many people want to support it, that they just send me money or put money in my hand. I've had people physically just stuff money in my hand. And I've had people send me checks. I've had people Cash App me and PayPal me and say, just keep doing what you're doing because it's important work.
That's incredible and really important. I'm glad you made that circle back, because there's so many creative people out here who are afraid. Can I exercise my creativity? And I think that is one of those dreams that many people have, and they're afraid to access it, to take the time, and sometimes are doing things that don't serve their soul when they could be doing something different. I want to understand, if you should share with us what some of the stories are in the play, because not only did we have the COVID-19 pandemic, but we had the murder of George Floyd and so many others, by the way, but his murder became the tipping point that changed so many things. We just had the 1 year anniversary of his murder, and people are quite reflective. Many changes occurred in our country. You know, corporations like no other time started throwing money at how can we fix this? How can we make people more aware of diversity, equity, and inclusion? How can we do something more than just say this is terrible for a news cycle and keep it moving? But a lot of people are tired of thinking about race and just want things to go back to whatever normal is, which doesn't work for a lot of folk. You wrote Brown Boy Mad way before George Floyd's murder. As you mentioned, almost being beaten badly because you had bought a car and they didn't believe it. What are some of the other stories that you share, and what's the theme of Brown Boy Mad?
So the theme is really encapsulated by the title. Like, I am a brown boy who's mad. That anger has been built up over years of these types of experiences, and the fact that we don't talk about it, really. Like, even amongst ourselves, we don't talk about it until something happens. And when something happens, then all the stories come out. When we start talking about all our similar experiences. And that was my experience with Brown Boy Mad. When I put this out, my friends, my black male friends who have been friends of mine forever, started sharing their stories with me and their similar stories. But we hadn't talked about those things before. So just to circle back to your question, yeah, when I bought my first car, I was put in a life-threatening situation by the police just for sitting in the car. Like, it wasn't even in motion. So it's parking while black in my case.
Ooh.
And that has been a theme that has persisted in my life, because the short film that I mentioned that was at the beginning of Brown Boy Mad is a short film about me test driving while black. And we haven't talked about it, but that's one of the things that you and I have both done, test driving cars and writing about them. And I was doing a test drive here in Nashville many years ago when not even the police, just some local white men decided that they didn't like, I guess, how we looked or maybe what we were doing. And they threatened us. They brandished guns and threatened us about doing what we were supposed to be doing. We're doing our work of test driving this car, but that became a very tense situation, obviously. And that's one of the things that was talked about in the play. But I think in terms of talking about the play, the experience that I like to ping most is this story I have from Boston. I was born and raised in Boston, and I was out with my brother, my older brother. We'd gone to a party. We were walking back to the house. We were about half a block away from the house at this point. And the whole night, he'd been telling me to turn my hat on forwards. I had a baseball cap on backwards because I was trying to be cool because I was hanging out with my older brother. And I was just, you know, trying to fit in. And I wouldn't do it because I was trying to be cool. And half a block away from the house, a squad car pulls up on the curb beside us and puts the big, bright spotlight on us. And I didn't know what to do. So I looked up at him, and he just continued walking. So I just continued walking. But I felt so many things. I felt terrified. I was a child at this point. I was in third grade. So terrified and scared. I didn't know what to do, but I felt like being accused of something, that really bright light on us. And they followed us all the way home. They kept that light on us all the way home. And they had to drive at like 1 mile an hour in order to keep pace with us. They never said anything. They never stopped us, but they kept that light on us the whole time. And I'll never forget when they pulled off, my brother said, "That's why I told you to turn your hat around."
Ooh. And like, that was one of my... How much older is your brother?
He was about 10 years older than me.
Oh, so he was old enough to understand.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of my early lessons of racism that really didn't crystallize until later, because still as a child, I was still trying to process it, but I never forgot it. And those are the types of stories that I cobbled together to create Brown Boy Mad. And as I've talked about in this interview, it has inspired many other people to share their similar stories. And I'm always really astounded and devastated by not only the similarity of stories, but the ages of the people who are telling me these stories. You know, I've had some much younger people share stories with me that are similar to mine, and it's really just heartbreaking. So for those folks that want things to go back to normal, you have to start listening to these stories. You have to really open your mind to the fact that these are life experiences that we have constantly all the time that we have kept quiet about, or we've talked about and you haven't believed us. So, you know, just imagine what it's like. Like, that's the best way to connect to it. Imagine what these experiences are like. Imagine what it must have been like for me to buy my first car, because all of us have had that experience, to buy my first car. And the first time I sat in it, to have three police officers roll up in an aggressive way. And now I'm wondering if I'm going to live past this moment, when 5 seconds ago, I was just enjoying all the wonderful things that come with buying your first car. So to go from one to the other extreme in a blink of an eye, like, that's a story that everyone can relate to. And so if you build in the fact that we have these experiences all the time, we just don't talk about them, like, that's going to help you not want to sweep this under the rug.
I hope so. You know, I talk to a lot of people who just don't want to think about it. I've listened to well-meaning people who are like, okay, I don't treat people in the ways that you're talking about. Like, okay, maybe you don't, but that's the difference between racism and anti-racism, right? You know, many people will say, I'm not a racist, but are you an anti-racist? Are you willing to stand up and also listen when people are sharing their pain with you? What have you found, Sekou, in working with the students at Fisk, in working out this play and having people go in emotionally and feel these things, knowing that today many of these injustices still happen? What do you experience with the students, and how do you foster a sense of hopefulness when you're actually depicting fear and misery?
I'm glad you asked, because even before I got to Fisk, for me, I had to lighten it up. Even when I was writing it, I had to break it up with humor. And so I wrote these much shorter pieces in between the longer pieces that are funny. And they're pointing a finger at things that actually happened, but it's done in a funny way. And I remember there was a rehearsal, one of the early rehearsals when I first introduced these pieces to the group, and the students started arguing over which poem they were going to get to recite, because they resonated with them so much that they were like, no, I got that one. No, I called it first. I called it first. No, I called it. Let me have that one. And so just watching that happen was very fun. And then I gave them carte blanche to go where they wanted with it on stage. So it wasn't just my words. It was my words, but their embodiment of it. And I let them ad lib and really live it. And so what happened is that they all chose the poems that resonated with them, like something that had happened to them. And just to give an example, like, often Black people, and me specifically, will go into a store and be mistaken as an employee.
Uh-huh.
Like, that happens all the time, right? So one of the poems was about that. It was very short, but it was just like, I don't work here. And the, and the woman who wanted that one, she went off. She was a singer. She sang this whole thing about it, about how she didn't work here, and look for a name tag and all that stuff, because it is very truthful. Like, it's still very honest, but it's a way to talk about something honest in a light way. So that was very helpful to me first, and then to them, and then also to folks across the aisle, because people who are allies have started asking for snippets of the play and the documentary so that they can have these conversations about race. And so it's been very helpful when they watch it that there's comedy there, that there's something to laugh
at.
You know, so it's not quite as in your face as some other things.
When you say that, though, I've had the occasion recently of going into stores, you know, like big box stores, you know, Target, Walmart, whatever. And but places that I don't usually frequent, like when I've been somewhere else. And I saw white men who looked like they worked there, maybe the grocery store. And I said, excuse me, could you tell me where such and such is? The look on their faces, you could not possibly be talking to me. Just aghast that I would have said that. It happens every day to us, right?
Yes. Yes.
It's crazy.
All the time. And so I've trained myself to look for name tags all the time. And I just invite them to look for name tags too. I'll tell one quick one. I was in a bookstore, Barnes & Noble, in a full suit. And I had this guy ask me where the fiction section was. I'm there shopping for myself. He kept asking. So I was confused at first, so I didn't respond. And then I said, what makes you think I work here? And he just walked away. Like, no, sorry. No, my bad. No, nothing. Just turned on his heels and walked away. I was like, wow.
Yeah, wow. It's real. Hey, guys, you are listening to Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole here on WBAI in New York City. That's 99.5 FM and everywhere online at WBAI.org. We are talking to Sekou Writes. He has his, what did I call it? Your movement. The doing movement. We can do it now. What does doing stand for again?
Determined to outpicture internal necessary growth. That's what it means today. It might mean something else next week.
Doing. And Sekou is offering t-shirts to you that say doing. If you make a $40 or larger contribution to WBAI, we're so grateful. And what Sekou has described to us is every t-shirt that he sells, he gifts one to someone who is unhoused, which is such a great way of sharing the love. And and those are the hero hoodies, right? The hero hoodies.
Right.
Yeah. And so our number is 212-206-2950. You can call that number, say that you want a doing t-shirt, $40, and you can have one. That's your gift from Sekou with the gift that you offer to WBAI to keep us afloat. Again, 212-206-2950, or you could go online at give2wbai.org. Again, if you want a t-shirt, it's wonderful. If you just want to make a contribution, because this is your home radio station. I talk all the time about, we really need to understand that it is a gift to have a place where you can go to listen to music that you love, to people who can inspire you, to hosts who are going to tell you the truth. As best we know it, are going to do research and find people to bring to you, to inspire you, to teach you, to guide you, and that you can trust. And this is so important today, because there are so many voices out there that are straight up lying to you, that are telling you stuff that is obviously untrue, but with such a straight face that they have convinced people that these things are true. I don't understand how that is happening, but it happens every single day. And WBAI does not do that. So when there are media outlets that are just pumping out lies, you know that WBAI is pumping out the truth. Don't you want the truth to live? Support us. 212-206-2950 or go to give2wbai.org, and that's the numeral 2. So Sekou, and thank you for your generosity with the t-shirts. We really appreciate it. And what I want to tell you guys, I have a doing a hoodie.
Yes, yes you do.
Yes, I do. And when it was cool, which is not now, but when it was cool outside, and I was walking in Central Park, which is something that I love to do. You know, people see that and it inspires them to take action. Doing inspires you to take action, just like the hero t-shirts and hoodies that you were describing. When you wear the message that you give about yourself is important. And so, you know, when you wear a t-shirt that's crazy, is given, if the message on it is crazy, then people are looking at you like you're crazy. Right. Or if it's negative, then they think you're negative. Always am saying choose the positive. That is what I learned from my family. It makes such an important difference. And in these days, when there's a lot of negativity around us, it's up to us to choose the positive again and again. Now, Sekou, let's talk a little more about the young people, because I'm a firm believer that when we are cross-generational and intentional about it, that we, you know, I've surrounded myself with young people for my entire life and career. I feel I learn tremendously from young people as they also learn from me, but I think it's equal. You know, so can you talk about what you are learning by engaging these students at Fisk and what you think about, especially young Black people and the future?
Yeah, it's been such an inspirational, educational experience. And as I mentioned earlier, you don't know what's going to happen once you take whatever your project is out of the box. Once you take it out of the box, you introduce it to the world, you don't know where it's going to go. So we've already talked about the first thing that happened. All of a sudden, my play became co-ed. Like, never mind that I wrote it as a one-man show.
Right.
For me, like, first of all, there was a cast, and then there was a multi-gender cast. So there's that. The fact that these stories are universal came from them. Like, if they hadn't been pursuing me about roles for women, like, I don't think I ever would have made that decision. So there's that.
Sure.
And then there's the reactions that they had to the language. Like I mentioned, I wrote it a long time ago. So I literally updated the language based mm-hmm. on things that they said, based on their current slang, and based mm-hmm. on their reaction. Like, ooh, Mr. Sekou, that's kind of old. That's what they called me, Mr. Sekou. That's kind of, I don't know. Yeah, so some song I had in there, they were like, ooh, I don't know. So I updated some of the songs even that I referenced in the play based on what they said. And yeah, it's been a very informative experience. And then even I'll take it even further. Like, you talked about the give and take of the generations.
Yeah.
So after the play closed, I was on campus doing something else. And I heard one of my students refer to another student as my replacement word for the N-word, which is there's a whole poem in the play about replacing the N-word. And she was just casually using my replacement word. She'd eliminated the N-word from her vocabulary, never talked to me about it, had just done it. And I was like, wow, I'm having an influence on these students that might last a lifetime. So that was
okay, really, come on, we need to know. What does Mr. Sekou say the replacement word is?
So the word is edit, and that doesn't really make sense in this context, just talking about it, but there's a whole poem about how we should eliminate that word and what to replace it with. And the word that I use is edit, but I do it in a poetic way so that it makes a little bit more sense in the play. So check out the play and you'll see what I mean.
And so how can people check out the play, by the way?
So it got picked up by American Legacy Network. Shout out to American Legacy Network.
Rodney.
They've been doing that thing for a long time. So for those of you that don't know, it's a subscription service kind of like Amazon Prime or Netflix. So you go to AmericanLegacyNetwork.com, you sign up for their streaming service. There's a monthly fee. They have a week free before they start charging you, so you can check it out, kick the tires. But the whole stage reading at Fisk is uploaded to American Legacy Network, so you can rent it at your leisure and check it out. And we actually did a talk back. When I say we, I did a talk back with American Legacy Network the day that they uploaded it to their system. And that was a really cool talk back. So we're going to be uploading that to the platform soon, too. But I'm really excited about that work. Folks don't know that there are other options beyond Netflix that are specifically Black-owned and have Black content. And so they've got a lot of Black movies, a lot of Black TV shows, a lot of interesting content. So please check them out and check out my play while you're on the platform.
And let me just say, because American Legacy has been around for a lot of years. I don't know how many right now, but it used to live as a magazine, I think, with a circulation of about 500,000, primarily in the South. And it is Black history, all about Black history. I worked with them for a while. I created a supplement, American Legacy Woman. And the work is just celebrating Black people. And now they have the network. So anybody who's looking for that, to your point, Sekou, you know, we see when we turn on TV or on cable, you have so many different offerings other than Prime, Netflix, and Hulu, but you have to look for them. So, folks, American Legacy Network, look that one up. You can find Brown Boy Mad. And how do people reach you, Seiko?
So the best way to find me is on Instagram at Seiko Writes. If you're interested in any of these wearable affirmations, just go to givehoohoodies.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I am proud of you. I'm so excited about all the things that you have done. And I want people to understand that even in difficult times, we have the choice of really leaping into our greatness, which is something that you have been doing with the Doing Movement and all these great things that you've been up to. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me. And thanks for continuing to be an inspiration to me and to other folks. And I'm just going to end with this one thing that I will expand on later. But you have always said, turn the finger back around to yourself. I've been around you so many times when you've said that. And it's just now that it's really gelling for me. Because when you've said that before, I've always been looking around at other folks. Are you guys pointing the finger back at yourself? But I'm getting it now. And that's what I'm doing for me. And I invite other people to do it for themselves. And that will help you keep doing.
Yeah. And just to be clear on that point, what I say is when you start complaining and blaming other people for your unhappiness, for your state of being, your state of mind, your state of finances, whatever your state is, when you start pointing your finger and complaining and talking about other folk, that's when I say, wrestle your finger around and point it at yourself and ask yourself, what is your role in getting yourself into this position? And what can you do to get yourself out of it? And it's hard to do. It's easy for me to say. It is one of the hardest things to do. But if you do that, then you can free yourself of whatever is constricting you. It works. It is hard. But look, Seiko is a perfect example of someone who is doing it. It, by the way, it's not something you just do and then it's done. It's ongoing in order for you to live the greatest life that you can. So thank you, my friend. It's wonderful to be with you. And I celebrate you. Thank you all for being with me here on Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole. I support you. I send you off this week with all the love that you can receive. And until we meet again, have a great day and make it count.
And you're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. And the pledge line, if you're interested in supporting Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole, that number is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. For Dream Leapers with Harriet Cole.